Welcome to Compromising Positions. I'm Leanne Potter, cyber anthropologist and head of security operations for a major retailer.
And I'm Jeff Watkins, a cybersecurity enthusiast and CTO for a major tech consultancy. Together, we're the tech podcast that asks non-cybersecurity professionals what we in the industry can do to make their lives easier.
And help make our organizations more prepared to face ever-changing human-centric cyber threats.
In this episode, we're once again joined by Damian Obal, head of design at Ardoc, lecturer and international speaker on all things design and data, for part two of our illuminating chat.
In this episode, and the BAFTA for Best Cybersecurity Awareness Training goes to, we're going to look at how we practically apply design principles to our security awareness programs with things like design thinking, the double diamond design method, and opportunity solution trees with much, much more.
We also discuss the dangers of gamification and how to get your BAFTA award-winning moment when delivering your security message to the business. We love this chat and we think you will do too, so sit back and enjoy our second interview with Damian Obal.
My first job in tech was software development. I am so grateful to the opportunity to sit in on user research sessions. At the time, it was the kind of two-way mirror. So here's our product. You gave the customer an iPad, for example, and said, right, okay, navigate to these pages. And listening to how people actually use things and experience things is such an eye-opener, especially when you've written that line of code yourself, or in your case, designed it yourself. Understanding, actually, in your head, this is the journey you took because you designed it, but then someone picks up and does a totally completely different thing, and that is so interesting. And there's a lot to be said about doing that analysis and understanding of challenging your own expectations of how someone's going to react in a certain situation. And I think for cybersecurity professionals, we do make a lot of assumptions of how people should act, how people will act. And if we look at the statistics of cybersecurity breaches and how they happen, we're not very good at understanding and analyzing that.
But that's because you work with humans, right? And it's kind of like the people process technology, and like people is the hardest to understand.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting... So somebody, I think it might have been Beck, one of our colleagues the other week, said something very... I think it was a very profound line, because I think cybersecurity awareness is higher than ever, but awareness does not equal behavioral change. And it's like, oh yeah, that's a point. There's plenty of things I can be aware of. We talked about those. They're in the UK. It was some anti-copyright adverts about copying films. And it's like, you wouldn't steal a hat, you wouldn't steal a car, you wouldn't steal a... So it's just... And people sort of laugh at them nowadays. And I don't think it changed anything. I mean, it brought further awareness that, you know, copying a video is illegal. I'm not sure it changed many people's behavior. And I found that a really interesting, like, line. It's like, awareness does not equal behavioral change. Like, yeah, you're right there.
It's still basic. It's basic needs and, like, what's the shortcuts. And this is the outcome I want. Like, what's the shortest way to get there? And then it's convenience. And I think convenience, you know best, but convenience, it's probably the best, the biggest enemy of security, or like the biggest danger. Because if something is convenient, we'll run with it. And a lot of times in projects, when we are in a rush, then it's like, okay, like, screw this, like, screw that. And then in product development, it's very hard. It's very untempting to go back and fix things. And that's where I have no visibility into that, but I'm sure that's where a lot of loopholes are created. 10 years later, you learn someone was sitting there for 10 years in your loophole that you had because you rushed with MVP. And that's where I'm saying, I don't know how, but if it's kind of, if it's not an afterthought, and if it's easy.
One of the other things, I guess, a modern security team has quite a lot of data. You know, they get a lot of logging, a lot of analytics. They get a lot of, sometimes I've seen terabytes of data. You know, they get a lot. And of course, now, of course, you being both an expert in the user side and the data side, and obviously your actual talk entirely linchpins upon this. Like, how could security teams use the data they have to tell better stories?
I think just like showing it, like we said before, like showing it in a way that people can understand, saying like, hey, this is the, you mentioned like the quantity of data, and then this exposing it, like, hey, this is how much data do we, like, that's our throughput, that's a risk on its own. And then say, what are we doing about it? And then saying, out of all this is, and then you, for example, say something, out of all this is like how much we actually share on email, which by default, we know email, no bueno. So, and this is how many attachments you send. And then, you know, kind of, and it's not you, Jeff, or you, Leanne, it's kind of, but you as employees. And it's kind of like more like exposing the data behind. A lot of times, that's why we love dashboards. We look at the numbers and we don't understand them. It's like, whoa, this looks, this looks important. And again, it's manipulating what we show. But if you want to raise the awareness, kind of like we kind of extrapolate. And I think it would be great to just the quantities And that's what I, when I was working with data, that's what I learned, like quantity is, like I said, by default is a risk factor, because there's so much and it's like so easy to hide a needle in a haystack. So, or like so hard to find the needle if you want. So just expose it, I think, is the first.
Yeah, that's really useful. One thing I remember doing, it's mostly just because I read a book about infographics and I really wanted to try it out, but I took some of the stats from how many emails did we, you know, send as an organization, how many emails did we receive, how many of those emails were malicious, how many of those emails did people click on, how many emails did those open, how much did we defend against, how much did we not defend against. And that information, you know, it was only just me really just trying out types of information to see what worked. But so many people replied going, that is actually really interesting. I had no idea it was those volumes. And I think as an industry, we don't really emphasize volumes organizationally. I think, you know, if we talk in very broad senses of, you know, cyber crime is on the increase massively. It's trillions of dollars. Something like 10.5 trillion or something like that, Jeff, for 2025 is going to be lost to cyber criminals. So absolutely a huge amount. So we can understand that kind of thing. But when you focus it right down to the organizational level and say, and we are a target, I think that data story can be very interesting.
And to your point, I think that data story is already very powerful in the cybersecurity products. But the challenge is because that's like three people in a company that actually look at those products. I've seen a couple and they're actually very good. You know, they show you like, hey, that person is surprisingly a lot on Dropbox, or like that person, and you know, they can predict. I heard stories, you know, they can predict behavior when someone's going to quit, and it's scary what those softwares can do. So they are already powerful, they are like valuable, but then the whole security story is not distributed. It's kind of like, I think it's in the like three people have like a hold of it, and then there's nothing, and then there's the funny videos. So, but again, there's like so much we can do, and kind of how can we inform and share some bits of it without exposing like, hey, we know much more about you than you think, for example. I think the products are there, but if we treat security more as a product, that's a bit more philosophical. But when we treat things like products, then we can apply, for example, principles, and we say, hey, did we think about that? Did we think about, is it approachable? Is it useful? Is it learnable? Whilst the cybersecurity product as a service is there, I think.
Ooh, I like that. Cybersecurity product as a service. Very nice. One thing we were discussing when we had a catch up before we recorded the show was your experience with design thinking and how it could be applied to cybersecurity. Could you explain for our listeners what design thinking is?
Design thinking is one of the design methodologies, or like a framework, or you can go like a school of thought almost, because it's well known. Most designers are kind of like snarky about it because it's more used by the business, which is great for us. If something is on Harvard Business Review front cover, that's great. And design thinking is applying design methods to, for example, solving business challenges or discovering opportunities and needs. And that's why it's very great, because everyone can use it. It's a set of methods, set of principles that you can apply. Why it's good? It's because we can challenge things like security. We can look at it from a user perspective. We break it down. And then we, for example, focus on the challenges first. We identify usually the key challenge. And we say, like, okay, this is the three areas that we think are the most important. And then again, you apply different design methods of ideation, come up with solutions, potential solutions. And then you kind of zoom in again and say, like, hey, this is the one we're going to develop and we're going to test it. So I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with like the typical like the design double diamond. It's like very famous, like the double diamond. Yeah. So first you go broad to identify all the different challenges. Then you convert on one challenge that you want to tackle, and again open up to find as many solutions as possible. And this the double diamond to me describes very nicely the gist of design thinking and different design methods applied, not necessarily only to designers, and with security. I think we could do a lot.
For a part of a talk we were building before, we were looking at some of the elements of design thinking into threat modeling and things like that, into when it comes to actually thinking about the other side, like how might we attack?
Yes, exactly. And there's all this like product thinking, for example, it's quite used now with Teresa Torres with like the opportunity solution trees. And then you go the whole way from the challenge, which is automatically also an opportunity. If something is a problem, it's also a product opportunity. And then you go down and say, like, okay, what are the potential solutions for it? And then they say, we're going to pick one and we're going to do three experiments. And then you test those hypotheses and then say, we are wrong. So we go back. So it's kind of, it's almost like a DAX trees, but it's...
I was about to say that. Yes. It feels like we came full circle with that, and that exactly. made me smile a lot. And I guess then the same could be true, is if you build those attack trees and you go, let's try some of these and see what countermeasures we put in place to make that not a thing anymore. Yeah, that's very interesting. Thank you.
And that's why it's interesting. It's because it's, you can connect the dots, and that's important. In an attack tree, you kind of connect the dots. You go from A to Z. And in everything we do with design thinking, for example, is connecting the dots. So it feels whole, it feels end to end. And that's by default, it's much easier if we go back to the story. Then you can tell it. Exactly. This is what we did. You know, we're kind of exposing ourselves. And that's what design is usually relatively okay, or at least we try to do that, to kind of show what we're working on. So it's kind of, there's no secret. We were forced to do that in the past because, you know, it was hard to invest in design. So it was very intangible, especially research. So we need to, that's what we're doing, you know, that's our deliverables. But with cybersecurity, it's like, okay, what's actually it? It's kind of, it's out there. It's very intangible.
And I think despite it being intangible, we need to, as an industry, cybersecurity professionals, give ourselves permission to experiment. And I think that's probably the actual big barrier is jumping over, because we, and rightly so, yes, the stakes are very high if we get this wrong. However, if we think about it before it happens and try and manage it in the abstract first and run in an experimental way, these four exercises, surely that's much better than overcomplicating a process, overcomplicating policies that might, yes, in the first instance, stop anything from happening, but maybe literally stop anything from happening, as in stopping other people being productive in what they need to do. And I wonder, how do you change that mindset of, I'm too scared to experiment with these four experiments because the stakes are so high?
I think it's because they are so high, we need to experiment. Not to sound philosophical, but because it's so important. For example, what design usually does is, like, we tackle the hard questions. Like, the easy questions are usually, you don't apply design thinking and the whole, we just fix them. So when we do spend time, it's when something is hard. When we think about, like, horizon projects, for example, that's where you do proper research. And that's when things are really important, when the stakes are high. When I keep repeating myself saying, like, explaining what my role is, for example, as a head of design, is like to minimize risk of investment. That's what we do. So kind of to speed up the process and minimize the risk. So we kind of try to be more certain that what we're building is the right thing. So that's why I think experimenting is good.
But in your world, you look really cool doing it. When you say it like that, I'm like, that's something I should be saying. But you look cool when you say it. And I look like the bad guy. So
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point, because then you look like, oh, you don't know what you're doing. So it's, yeah, you cannot admit. It's a good point. But then you need to get allies. I think that's, and then distribute the experimentation process. I think that's what, for example, designers are very good at getting, like, other people excited. So, because we are understaffed, and then we kind of need allies. So we kind of, usually the first ones to go would be developers, and then we kind of convert them to decent, semi-decent designers. So they are the advocates. So it's kind of, if you can do that, and then we do that by those, like, for example, with design thinking, so do lightweight, so they feel like, I can do that. Like, I think this call user thing is exciting. So then you kind of, and they say, okay, my work here is done.
It feels very similar to people trying to engage, like, developers in security champion programs, only maybe you're doing it in a slightly more design thinking way, and like in thinking about the actual engagement more than the impact skills rather than soft skills, rather than the hard skills, the technical skills. One thing we mentioned earlier, and in another chat, we talked about gamifying cybersecurity. You mentioned before some of the downsides potentially to gamification.
Yeah, my answer would be just, oh, please don't. And that's coming from a designer. I really hate when we, like I said before, I love games. I'm like a gamer by heart. So I love my son he's turning 9, so I'm like super excited I can game with him. I love games, but not everything should be gamified. And that was, I sadly grew up in times when everything was gamified for the worst. And like I said, security doesn't have to be fun. If we gamify parts of it, I think that's great. if we gamify, for example, if you're a developer, like who's gonna find the most bugs, like who's gonna hack our system first? And I know there's some security software that does that, for example. That's great. But if you try to gamify, for example, for me as a designer, and it's like, tell me what I need to know. And like, I don't have to be part of this game. I'm mature enough to understand it's important if you tell me like in a nice, short, human way. So not disagreeing. I love that we are trying to, but I think cybersecurity is the most gamified, definitely in all the onboardings. It's the most gamified I've ever seen. And that's like, I've seen so many different programs and softwares and videos, and they're all gamified. And it's obviously like, we're going to solve it. But it's the same as with engagement at work, for example, it's like engagement surveys. And I feel we're kind of in this loop that everybody's copying each other and no one's finding a better solution to the problem. And then we're just trying to slap gamification on it. But, you know, sometimes when you go running, Strava is not gamified, you know, or like any run keeper or whatever we use. It's not gamified. It's like leaderboard. That's not gamified. I'm just incentivized to it. Others try to gamify it, and then they said, you know, it's like kind of childish. Like, why don't we just give them leaderboards and then they compete with themselves? So a long story, but I don't think gamification is the solution or the answer. It's great if we do it, but it's not the answer. Yeah, I hate it. Sorry.
Because I remember you mentioned this before. I really wanted to get your opinions on it. So I think it's the first thing when people are struggling with engagement, it's the first thing that people reach for nowadays without necessarily understanding what it actually means in the first place, which I think is another problem.
Yep. Yeah, and it's not solving the problem. It's, for example, when there was the pandemic, the COVID, and then all the companies they invested in this like remote well-being, and it's great, but it's not a solution to the problem. It's just like talk to people, ask them how they're doing. It's don't give them free software. It's not going to be a solution, and just because it looks nice and I love it, I'm a designer, so I love all those like programs, but it will never replace someone asking like, hey Damian, how are you doing? Or in the case of cybersecurity, if someone saying like, hey, this is what we achieved with your help, or like, this is what we could do because you are helping us kind of be more security aware. I think nothing replaces that. Just tell what it is and why I should care.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to give a shout out to a book which does touch upon what you were saying, which was, you know, applied badly, it's just bad gamification. And there's a book called Actionable Gamification by, and I'm going to ruin this, Yu Kai Chow. And I'm going to put it in the show notes. And literally that book opens with, so this chap has dedicated his whole career to gamification, but it opens with, actually, most cases it doesn't work. And it's a big old tomb of a book, but it's really interesting. And he goes through the idea of, as you touched upon there, like at one point everything was gamified, you know, especially apps and things like that, you know. But the whole purpose of that was to keep you engaged in a almost negative sense. There's definitely, you can be engaged in a process, but it doesn't feed your soul, as it were. It doesn't influence behavior. It's just that dopamine hit, which is doesn't change anything.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where like good gamification, if you go to any good game, what they're good at is like it's very easy to get on board. So it's like, and then it's like what's like grogging, I think is would be the term. It's kind of, it's just hard enough or just easy enough. So it's kind of, it's always a challenge. And that's very hard to do. That's why we have game designers and game studios that actually spend time on that. And you cannot just say I'm gonna do the same in our software. So it's kind of not as easy. So it's a whole process behind it.
No, and there definitely needs to be caution if that's the way you're going to go. Not saying I've not seen it done well, but I've also seen more occasions where it's not done well. So I mean, you're very right to be suspicious of it, and I'm very glad that we got your thoughts on it, considering your background as well.
If you find something that really works, please let me know. I'm really a fan of gamification if it's done right. Like Zombies Run, for example, is amazing. Like when you run and then zombies chasing you, that's amazing. But it's one of the only good example of sports gamified apps. But because that's they have the, like a BAFTA writer.
that's the app on when you're doing running, isn't it? Where you have to pretend.
Yeah. It's from Scotland. But there's like two writers actually behind it. Like one is like a BAFTA winner, something. So it's like actual people who know how to write stories.
I mean, just finding decent cybersecurity professionals in general is hard, but getting a BAFTA nominated cybersecurity professional, that's going to be really, really tough. If anyone working in that industry wants to come and join the cybersecurity industry, we'll welcome you with open arms. Come and design all our security awareness training.
But to your point, and sorry for jumping in, like in design, for example, we value writing. And I'm very fortunate, like I joined a team and we have like two writers on 10 designers. And that's like it's very important. So you need to tell story through your UI, for example, to the interface, through the journey. So it's very, very important to have this story aspect and how it sounds, how it feels. We call it content, not just writing, but it is a good point. So.
Awesome. Well, you have been absolutely generous with your time. I've really enjoyed this conversation. If our listeners want to reach out to you, where can they find you? And don't forget to plug your courses as well.
I live online, so feel free to share my contacts, like my email and all the social media, LinkedIn, so we can share with the listeners. I'm very happy to respond, especially on the topics that I'm not that familiar with. I started working with data because I had no idea with it. I worked with embedded systems because it felt cool and alien. I now work with enterprise architecture. Like, how cool is that, right? So again, I love being surrounded by people smarter than myself. And that's why I'm very happy and honored to be invited to the podcast. Thank you.
Oh, you're too kind. Thank you very much.
We'll put everything in the show notes so people can contact you. Definitely want to follow. Absolutely love all the content you put out. It's always so interesting and thought-provoking. And if you can catch him speaking, I know that you do a lot of public speaking internationally, make the effort. I really would recommend it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bodley and Jeff.
The eternal battle between convenience and security means we've got quite the task on our hands.
Yeah, humans are always looking for that shortcut.
Do you normally say that humans are inherently lazy?
I do, and with good reason, as our evolution has relied on it. It relies on us to be lazy, look for shortcuts, make decisions based on heuristics. It's all part of our evolution, that we don't expend unnecessary energy on things when things hit the proverbial fan.
Yeah, but why isn't security enough of a threatening prospect to stop people from acting insecurely?
Well, Damian touched on it a few times in our interview with him. It's down to the intangibility of the threat. Most people are aware of what needs to be done to have good security hygiene, but it really is a numbers game, so unless you've been actually hit by a security incident or have seen a security control do its job, you kind of compartmentalise the threat as non-urgent, and all those extra controls are just an inconvenience to the activities that do feel rewarding.
And I think that's where it becomes important to apply the design thinking methods that Damian was talking about. It reminds me of product development, where we're aiming for a happy user experience that is low friction and error-free. That should be the goal in security too.
Oh, I agree, and that's why Damian's security product as a service really got me excited. Can you imagine how much easier it would be to get buy-in from the business if we badged up security in this way?
Yeah, I think it would help a lot because they're already used to thinking in product-centric terms. Why not do the same for security?
Absolutely. What a fantastic episode.
Yeah. So links to everything that Damian discussed in this episode can be found in the show notes. And if you like the show, please do leave us a review and share on LinkedIn or in your teams. It really helps us spread the word and get high-quality guests like Damian on future episodes.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. See you next time. Keep secure and don't forget to ask yourself, am I the compromising position here?